is that in general, the Tanakh takes the beliefs of the ancient world as a given. So I'm going to give you an example. Let's say slavery. That was something that happened in the ancient world. And so slavery is going to be in the Tanakh, but they weren't necessarily they're not necessarily going to condone slavery, but they can't take it away because that was what was part of society. And so the same thing is that, like, women in Tanakh, in the ancient world, were a certain way. Let's say a lot of times they're subordinate. Never inferior, though. Like, if you look at Greco-Roman texts, they'll, like, show women as, like, less, or they'll, you know, portray them as saying that they're not intelligent or something like that, but the Tanakh will never say that. And so this year, I'm going to talk about how women really tell you a lot about society. So how women are treated can tell you if a society is wholesome or if it's corrupt. And yeah. So first I wanted to start out, everyone can please turn to Bereshit Perek Daled, Pasuk Chafimet. We're going to learn about the story of women. So again, it's Perek Daled, Pasuk Chafimet. Take your time. Also, if you have any questions or anything, please feel free to talk. Exactly.
All
time. Cool. Okay. Yeah. So I'm just starting to go, right? I'm just talking about the main thing in the Torah is about how women can show you, like, how based on how women are treated, shows you if a society is corrupt or wholesome or really about the society in general. So we're turning everyone to Bereshit Perek Daled, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. So I'm going to start. It says, we're learning about here the character of Lemech. Vayomer Lemech Nashav. Lemech says to his wives, Adam Tzia, Shim'an Koli, listen to my voice, Neshe Lemech Azna Amamdi. Hear my voice, wives of Lemech. Ki ish halakti lefitzi, v'yered lechevavti. Have I slain a man by my wound and a child by my bruise? Ki shivatayim yakum Kain, v'lenech shivim v'shiva. If Kain suffered vengeance at 7 generations, then Lenech at 77. Okay, so this one time Shiva, by the way, is based on Yael Yipus. So, right now, what we have here is Lenech. He's a descendant of, I think, Kain. And he is actually glorifying corruption. He's talking about killing a child, and next to it we have his wives, Ada Betzila. Ada Betzila, we do know their names, which is significant. Always pay attention to their names, but he does call them Nishe Lemech. And also we see that they're just standing there quietly. Now, I guess if someone, you know, is screaming about killing, then you also might not want to step up and say, okay, you know, that's wrong, because he might just turn around and kill you. And he's saying, you know, okay, Lemech is remembered for 7 generations for doing this, I'm going to remember it for even more. And so he's kind of glorifying corruption, and they're just standing there, silently, not doing anything. Okay, now let's read on to the next pasuk. Vayeda Adam od tishto, vatered ben, vaytikrat shemo shet, ki shet le'elokim, zera achel, tachat heaven, ki halgo kain. Right after this, it says, Vayeda Adam knew his wife, and they had a child named Shay, because God provided me with a child. Because why? Because Cain killed Hevel. So I think it's really interesting. Well, why do you guys think that it's, why does this come right after this? What's the deal? This is, the juxtaposition is crazy. Like, right after Lamech is, yes?
Well, but based on something you were just saying, it's interesting that, like, in the context of Lemech, you know, it makes sense. A lot of, like, ancient kings would sort of brag about conquering nations and killing people. And here it seems to be like, you know, he's sort of bragging about it. And, like, he's, like, giving a whole poem or something of the sort, the Song of the Sword, it's called, about, like, killing people. But then immediately after, we find that, like, killing's not really condoned, right? That, like, oh, you know, really, because Cain killed, he doesn't end up as the main, you know, progenitor of mankind. But really, Shay does.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I think also it's interesting that Chava is the person talking here, and before Ada and Sila are silent, when Cain is, as you said, like, saying how corruption is a good thing, and here Chava is the one speaking against it.
Exactly. You guys are great. So Chava finally comes here. She's like En Kol Chai, like, you know, the mother of all living things. I think it's interesting because I never really think of Chava in that way, but really she's like this woman who's saying, like, no, but I'm coming right after this, and I'm saying, no, Lenech is wrong, corruption is bad. And she kind of like sets us straight. And so that is definitely interesting. Okay, so I see that based on, you know, based on the women's silence and everything like that, that Lemeth was living in a kind of corrupt, corrupt area. Okay, so now we're gonna move on to Sefer Shoftim. We're gonna turn to Sefer Shoftim. Perek Aleph Yud-Bet. And what we're gonna do here, so it's Sefer Shoftim, Perek Aleph Yud-Bet. Okay, so I'm gonna set the stage for you guys. So Shoftim, we're just coming from Yoshua. Life was good. You know, we're not living in a corrupt society. Yoshua, I think, was like one of the best times. And this is actually a representation of how a woman is being active, and how because of that we see that they're actually living in a good, wholesome society. Now, obviously, there's problems with every society, but this is we're going to compare this story to a later story in Shoftim, and you see how like in the beginning of Shoftim, we have like women being more powerful, not women in general, but this woman, and then later on it kind of digresses. So let's look at Perek Pasuk Yud. ויאמר כרב, אשר יקה את קריית ספר, ולכדה, ונתתי את עכשיו ביתי לאישה. So Caleb, this is Caleb Ben Yefunah, whatever. And he says, you know, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer can marry my daughter, Achsa Biti. So first of all, it's always good that she has a name, because later on in Shoftim, they're not going to mention her name, and it's going to be non-existent, okay? And he's saying, whoever conquers it, conquering is supposed to be a good thing in Sefer Shoftim. If you conquer land, that's positive. ולכדה עתניאל בן כנז, אחי קלב הקטן ממנו, ויתן לו את עכשיו ביתו לאישה. So, Othniel is a chiller, he conquers it, it works out, okay? ויהי בבואה, so then, what do we have? עכשיו is being active. She goes to Othniel, ותסתם לשאול מאת אביה השדה. So she tells him, like, I want to go, you know, ask my dad for a field. I want to go ask him. But it's not mad at Hamol, so she's like, okay, I'm going to get on my donkey. No big deal. ויאמר לה כלב מלך, and Caleb's like, what's up? You know? ותאמר לו, הבה לי ברכה, give me a source of blessing, כי ארץ הנגב נתתני, because you've given me an arid land, ונתת לי את גולות מים, ויתן לה כלב את גולות, and she's like, oh, and give me water, okay? So if I don't translate, just let me know, because sometimes I forget. ויתן לה כלב את גולות אילת ואת גולות תחתית. So he ends up giving her the upper springs and the lower springs. Okay, so what do you guys think of this story? What can you, any ideas? Yes?
I mean, I'm not sure what to learn from it, but on first thought, I can't help but recall the story of a Benot Slachad, where like a woman, sort of women are asking for land or something like that, or sort of going out of their way to request something. I guess it doesn't end exactly the same, and it also doesn't get controversial, but
I don't know. That's so great, I didn't even think about that. That's really cool. And also like, in the ancient world, the way people, oh, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just-
Go for it.
I think it's interesting that you have two different models of agency here, because Kalev, at first glance, is the active one. He conquers the city with his bow and arrow, but it's not him who realizes that the inheritance that he's received isn't that great. It's the woman that he marries, and she takes a different form of agency, not with her muscles, let's say, but through her speech, and that ends up being just as effective in terms of getting the family a plot of land.
That's great, and also just to compare it, we're going to have a second.
I said Caleb, it should be Othniel ben Kenaz. Caleb's the one giving the land. I'm saying Othniel ben Kenaz is the warrior, but it's, right.
That's her kind of like, seal the deal. And also, I'm just going to tell you guys, we will be comparing this to the beginning story of Pilagesh Bagiva, which is the story of a man and his concubine, which doesn't really end well. What did I want to say? Yeah, okay, so here, like, there's a problem, and she's just like, okay, how can I deal with, how we solve this problem? And, like, she talks to her husband about it, and it's very healthy, and it's not like, I was also going to say, like, in the ancient world, the way it worked is, like, okay, so, like, I'm, like, a Shemit Binyamin person, let's say, and I marry a lady person, or, lady's not going to be visible, okay, I marry, give me a Shemit Dan, okay? So then I would go to Dan, and, like, not like she's going to, like, live with Don. She's just kind of, like, stopping by, and it's, like, a no-big-deal kind of thing. You'll get what I'm saying more when I get to that story. Did you want to say, or?
No.
Okay, so this is good story. Women are treated well.
What's the point of the story?
What's the point? That's a really good question. I think it's just... here in the beginning of Shoftim, we do have, like, oh, these are the lands that we did conquer, these are the lands that we didn't conquer.
Okay.
I don't really know in the context of the Sefer. Maybe it's, like, I don't know, because they're talking about conquering land,
yeah.
So this is one specific story where they're conquering land, and, I don't know, I think a lot has to do with, to show, I think a lot of it has to do with the placement that, like, this is, like, society's good. I really do believe that, because as this Sefer goes on, you're going to see, like, basically, you know, the Bnei Israel starts to, like, crumble, and the treatment of women gets even worse and worse and worse. Okay. So, if everyone can actually now turn to Sefer Shoftim, Perek Yudtet, Pasuk Aleph. Okay, so I guess should I briefly summarize the story of Pelegesh Bagibah, or should I? Okay, so basically the story of Pelegesh Bagibah is about this man who has a concubine, and she gets very upset one day, and she just leaves, and the man comes back to pick up his concubine who abandoned him, and then they go and stay in a night in Shevet Binyamin, and ultimately, like, all the people surround the city, and they're like, give me your man, and give me your concubine, and they end up, like, raping the concubine until she dies, and then, you probably don't even need to know all this for the story, but why not? Okay, so then, what happens is that the man is so upset, he's horrible, upset that what happened to his concubine, so he just decides to chop off his concubine, send all the pieces of her body to all the places in the world, all the places all over the land of Israel, and then a whole giant civil war starts, and basically Sefer Shoftim ends in shambles, and then they begin. Okay, but we're just talking about actually the beginning of the story of this man. Okay, so let's look. Perek Yudtet Pasuk Aleph. Vayhi bayamim ahem umelech en b'Yisrael. What does that Torah tell you?
Bad.
No structure. This is bad. Not that the kings really helped us out, but it was supposed to be. Okay.
Before the kings came.
Right,
that's
exactly. It was before the kings. There's no structure. I just was like, whatever. It's before the kings. This is bad. Already, you know, the story starts this way. It can't be good. And there's this guy who lived in Yerkateh, and he took a Ishak Kilegesh. Has no name. This is not Acha. She is Isha Pilegesh. Mibet Lechem Yuda. Vatizne Alav Pilegesho. And his Pilegesh deserted him. So this is not like the story of Achsa where she had a problem. I'm going to go to my husband. I'm going to talk about it. I'm just going to go get on my donkey and get this settled. She just deserts him. There's clearly something wrong.
I can't help but know. I think it's a pun. Vatizne Alav Pilegesho. Like Vatizne, like Zanut. But it's sort of, it might be... I'm not positive.
That she leaves, and it's like out of, like, if you leave your home in ancient world, is like leaving is like.
I'm saying specifically in terms of relationships, so that's the word that's used.
Like,
it's not just that she leaves, but it's vatizne.
My translation translates it, played the harlot to him.
I mean, that's what the footnote in JPS says. Literally. No, they translate it as deserted, but then the little footnote says literally played the harlot. Anyway, just like a swan.
Oh, that's cool. I really didn't think about that. Thank you. Vatelech mito en beit aviyah. So she goes, she doesn't only, like, stop by, like, achza, stop by home. She goes to the house of her father. Like, she leaves whatever her settlement is, and she goes back to where she's from, which is, like, not done. El beit lechem yudah, vatehi sham al ba'chadashim. She's there for 4 months. Vayikam isha. Okay, her husband gets up. I'm sorry, but 4 months, if my husband, whatever, left me, I think I would get up a little before 4 months. To speak to her heart, that she and to return her. Vinalo imo, and his, that the lad is with him, vitsemech hamolim, and pairs of donkeys. So the father-in-law of the Pilegesh sees him really happy. And the father-in-law held and held on to her, to the man, and didn't let it go. And the man stayed there for 3 days. He ate and he drank and he stayed there overnight. So he's about to go, and again, once again, the father-in-law says to the man, sustain yourself, afterwards you're gonna go. Stay overnight again. Now, I just thought of this, but it says here, I don't know why, but that kind of reminds me of Right, from that, so I just kind of thought of like, in the Akedah, the whole purpose was like, not to actually get her sacrifice, but like here, she ends up kind of in that result, so kind of like, what we didn't want to learn from that. So again, like, she must be in some situation of abuse, like why does he keep wanting to like, keep him there? Again, he's trying to get up, and then the father-in-law is like pressing him to stay. He stays there overnight again. Sustain yourself. Sustain yourself now and wait until the afternoon. And the two of them. So basically, this is just saying, spend another night here. I'm not going to translate every single word. This time, though, in Pasuk Yud, it says, "Velo ha'ava ha'ish ladun, v'ikam v'ilech v'ivo ad nechoach." So he decides not to listen. This man is like, I'm not going to listen to my father-in-law anymore. I got to get out of here. The imo, notice the order. Who does he take with him? Semet Hamalim, number one. He's got to have his donkeys. Semet Hamalim Chavushim. Upilegsho imo. The last person mentioned is his Pilegesh. So his, you know, his value for who she is is not very high, and so you see she has no name here. She, you know, she has no say. She deserts. It's a very sad situation. She goes back to her homeland, and this is definitely a corrupt society where women aren't being treated nicely. Any comments, questions?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like her dad seems to be very aware that like if she goes back, she's not going to be treated properly, and tries to delay it for as long as possible. And like clearly going back to her parents' house was an option, but he wasn't like, it's weird that he wasn't able to stop taking her back. There's no choice given. Like, there's no like acknowledgement of like, oh, there must have been a reason why you left. Like, why did you leave? Let's fix that, or like, let's address that. There's none of that. It's just like, you left, I can't get you married from that.
That's so true, Shosh.
Super passive.
It's like, it's not healthy. Like, there's not, she's like not saying like, I'm upset. Also, like, why doesn't the father just say, no, you're not going back with him?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is kind of just a different association, but when describing a seducer in the Torah, the Ramban al Torah says that someone who seduces a woman who has to pay a cost and marry her is dover aliba, and that's exactly what this guy is doing to her over here. So, I mean, it's not the most, like you were saying, it's not necessarily the most healthy relationship if that means that he's like, you know, tricking her into coming back with him, and it's not necessarily what she wants to begin with.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
But I don't know if the
Ramban, I didn't even know that. That's cool. Yeah.
I feel like it is kind of like her whole decision to leave is kind of odd. I feel like her father's reaction actually makes sense, kind of like similar to like an Amaha Ivriya in Torah. It seems that having a position like a Pilegesh is almost considered security. Like you want like, it's beneficial for a woman to be in that position rather than to be on her own if she's away from her father's house. So, like, at least it seems to me that, like, her father's reaction would be the logical reaction. Like, no, you had a good thing going, you know, you someone that you could have children with, even if it wasn't, you know, I don't know the exact dynamic of Pilakshi in the ancient world, but I assume it'd be a position of security. So, if anything, that makes it more weird, the fact that she just leaves, and we don't know why she leaves. It doesn't say that he did anything at this point, at least. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. We were saying.
This, I think it's reflective of society, but it's also just reflective on Pilakshim, because we see also in Melachim that, like, when David HaMelech flees from his castle and it's burning, they leave the Pilakshot behind, that it might also just be the nature of different types of relationships. Like, before we were looking at a wife, and now we're looking at a Pilagesh.
I get what you're saying, but it also, it just seems unhealthy in general. Like, the fact that she's just called Pilagesh kind of concerns me. Like,
I mean, I think it might just be that.
Really has a name
yeah.
here. It's not no, like all the other characters have names. That she
no, but when does a Pilagesh ever have a name? Like, it's rare. We do have it in the beginning of Bereshit.
Right.
Having the institution of Pilagesh.
Are Pilagesh generally referred to by name?
Also, may I just point out that you talked about, whose wives did you just talk about? You talked about David.
Mm-hmm.
That also, by the way, can be used as an example of a completely corrupt society and how the women are treated there. Ultimately, Avshalom is intimate with all of them and uses them as political pawns. So if anything, they're, you know, it's just another example of how women are just seen as corrupt and, yeah. Yes?
Also, this is kind of a question.
Sure.
And then, but aren't Pilakshot usually, don't they exist usually in addition to a wife?
Yeah.
Or, right?
By definition.
And,
yeah.
Right? And here he doesn't seem to have any other wife, unless she's just not spoken about. But
yeah.
if he had a wife, then why does he care that this woman left? Like, he has someone else to be with and do all the living that he needs. It seems like he's completely single without her, so why isn't she his wife? You know, he's like letting her stay in this lower status of Pilakshot, but like, he could be changing that, and he chooses
so
not to.
I like that. Okay, so let's move on to the next story. How many do we unpack?
Great.
All right.
Take longer.
I'm afraid of taking too fast, so I have backup stories. I don't know if that's wrong. Okay. Now we're all going to turn to Shmuel Bet. Pelek Gimel. That's exactly. It's Shmuel Bet, Pelek Gimel, Pasuk Zayin. Okay. Story is this again? Okay, so this is the beginning of, she does.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the beginning of Shmuel Bet. So we have David as king, but still, like, although, like, God ordained David as king, he's still, like, not really king, because the nation is really split, and there's still, like, Shaul loyalists in the south who are, like, angry and, like, no, Shaul's the king. What? Well, Shaul died, and Shaul's son, Ish-Boshet, is now king. But he's not a very strong king, you would say. He's kind of, like, a puppet figure. And his son, Sabah, his commander, is Avner ben Ner. Okay? And Avner ben Ner kind of calls all the shots, and Ish-Boshet's kind of just, like, there. Okay, so let's start. Pasuk Zayin. Everyone see where we are? Okay. Ula Shaul Pilagesh Ushma Litva Bataya. Her name is Litva Bataya. Now I think that's a horrible name. Like, who would name their child Thor? So we should talk about that. Okay.
We did?
I thought you were saying that you would. But yeah.
No, I don't know if we talked about this, but I actually asked my rabbi the same question like 3 years ago, and he said that it's actually a coal. It's a reed spot, it's like a glowing coal. So
oh,
yeah.
That's better.
Yeah.
That's definitely better.
But still, a coal is not really that great. It's
still
really
cool.
Why? It's like a
fire.
A source of life.
It's a flattering
good.
Name.
It's nice.
Yeah. Okay, good
for
to
what
know.
It's worth.
That definitely makes it better.
totally.
Okay, still not going to name my child.
That's what it's called in Yeshayahu when he takes
it. Alright.
No.
And it also names
into
not
something.
Yeah, I think it's called something else.
Like, what it means, yeah, you're right. Exactly. Like, or pa, like, she turns her aura.
Yeah, you might be calling it
pa. Okay. Ushma mitzvah
batei. And, right? No.
Vayomer el Avner beno. Madu abata el pirek shavi. So Ish-Boshet, Shaul's kid, he is the king. It's all good. Okay. So, he's really upset because Avner ben Baba Tanya, who was just cool to be like. Now, in modern days, we don't, like, okay, we kind of just see, like, okay, like, we're with my step concubine mother, okay? But really, anyone who is intimate with the Pumegish of the king is like saying, I want to assert myself as king, okay? So I'll give you a couple of examples. Of Shalom, who was David's son, when he wanted to be king, he was intimate with all of his father's wives, which is gross. And also, when Shlomo HaMelech became king, Adoniah wanted to become king, and he wanted to be intimate with Abishag, who was like David's lady friend. Sorry, guys. Do not put this on while you're Torah. I'm excited now. Basically, when Adoniah was doing that, Shlomo HaMelech was like, no, can't do Abishag, because that's like asserting yourself as king. And so, really, what Ishbosheth is saying is, Avner-Bener, why are you trying to be king? That's not your place. Vayichal le'Avner le'od. Avner is upset. Adibrei Ishbosheth, what Ishbosheth said. Vayom me'arosh kelev anochi, am I a dog's head or something? Asheli yudah hayom, I said that for, I said chesed in Beit Shaul aviva el achiv el reim, that I do chesed for Beit Shaul, your father, and for your brothers, and for all his friends. And I have not handed the kingship over to the house of David. And now you're pinning me, like I've done so much for you, and now you're telling me that I've sinned with this woman? Here's what's going to happen to Avner. Just like God promised David the throne, he's also going to promise it to Avner. This actually angers me so much because Avner Ben-Ner is using God in a really corrupt way.
Like, what's the location again?
What?
What's the location again?
Somewhere Israel, I don't know.
No, I mean,
this is Shmuel Bet.
Right, Perek?
This is Shmuel Bet, Perek Gimel. Pasuk, we just read Pasuk, well, we're now at 10. So he's really using God, like, he doesn't know what God, like, if God's going to do this. He, like, uses God to, like, back up his plan, which I think is, like, super self-righteous of him. Then he says, here's what's going to happen. La'avir ha-mamlacha mi-Beit Shaul, that the mamlacha is going to go from Beit Shaul, ve'la'akim et kiseh David al Yisrael ba'ad Yehuda, midan el-ad Yashav. He's like, I'm going to make David the king. He's going to be like the king that everyone recognizes now, because you have all these Shaul loyalists who are all like, no, Shaul's still king. And he's like, no, I'm going to make that happen. So then Ishbosheth, you know, couldn't respond. He didn't know what to say then. So how is Ritzva Bataya used in this situation? What does she represent? I can just say that.
Object of the king.
Okay, yes, she's an object of the king. She's right now she's treated as a political pawn. Avner Ben-Ner, he really did this because he wanted to switch over to the other side. He realizes, Ishbosheth, this guy is really not so successful. I'm on the wrong side. I need a pretext to go on to the other side. And you can't just leave because then everyone's going to be like, you're not loyal, you know? You're supposed to be on Shaul's side. So he does this because he needs to get to the other side. And this way, it's okay. And so Ritzva Bataya, her feelings aren't thought about. It's like, she's just used here as a political pawn. And then, gets even worse, because David plays into this game. Don't worry, I still like David, but he has some issues, which is cool. Okay, you'd bet. Vayishlach Avner Melachim, he sends messengers, and David, tachtav, lemi alitz, whose land is this, David, if it's not yours? Keltav yitcha iti, make a covenant with me, vehine yadai imach la'asev, and if I call Israel, I'm gonna get all of Israel to follow you, David, I'm your man. Vayomer tov. He says, good, I'm going to make a covenant with you. But one thing I ask for you, Meitcha. Lo til et panai, ki im lifnei havyecha et michal bat shaul, bevoecha lirot et panai. He says, you know what? David says, I'm not going to make a agreement with you, Avner Ben-Ner, until you get Michal back, because she's with Shaul. What must have happened is Shaul obviously was a little upset at David for, you know, many reasons. And so during that time, he took Michal from being married to David and, you know, married her off to another guy, Paltiel ben Lash. David didn't really love Michal like Michal loved David. We know that. And also, we see here that she's called Michal Bat Shaul. Always notice how she's called. She's not called Michal Eshet David. She's Bat Shaul. Okay, so this isn't exactly what Michal would be wanting. So she's happy. She's with Paltiel, or Palti, whatever. Vayishlach David. Okay, so let's see what happens. Vayishlach David Melachim El Ishboshet Ben Shaul Emo. That I, because remember, David had fought to get Michal by getting the foreskins of 100 fishim. So he took her from Paltiel ben Naish. Vayelech ita isha haloch uboche achrei ab bachurim. Vayomer erav avnen lech ushuv vayishav. So what happens is Paltiel ben Naish is crying all the way to the city of Bachurim following Michal, and then Avner ben Ner is like, return? And there's nothing you can do. When a commander of an army tells you to return, you're going to return. And so we see Michal here is again used as a political pawn. He wants to see, are you so loyal that you're going to go back to the camp of Shaul and get me Michal? Even though this is horrible, and you know it's horrible because Paltiel ben Laish is crying after. Michal is one of those unfortunate characters, I think, in the whole entire Tanakh. And you see here, she just uses another political pawn. And this is, like, unfortunately, this is corruption. How you treat women and how you view them and how they view themselves is all showing you a lot about society and how they're ruling the government. Do we have any comments, questions? Pretty cool. Okay. How much time do I have?
Great.
Okay. Also, I'm not gonna go in depth in this story. I'm not gonna actually make you guys turn there. But I think after this story, you kind of see, even more how Michal is kind of like doesn't really get the good end out of life because, when David's bringing in the Aron. To Jerusalem and dancing with it, Michal kind of comes up to him, gives him some critique, and at the end it says, at the end David says, really the kingdom was given to me, and at the end the last pasuk says, and Michal never had any more children. And so it's kind of left, ambiguous. Did Michal not have children because she just couldn't have children, or like that just like David didn't want to have children with her, and so really she's unfortunate. Like, if she wasn't used as a political, she was used as a political pawn actually in the beginning. How was she used as a political pawn in the beginning? Because I don't know.
She was a prize for Goliath.
Right.
If you kill Goliath, you get Goliath.
And also, like, Shaul, I think, wanted, like, Shaul felt very threatened by David, so he wanted, it's kind of like a spy. I thought Michal would be helpful to me. I'm going to have my daughter, spying on the, that didn't really work out for him in the end. But the reason she's used as a political pawn throughout her whole entire life. Okay, last story. Everyone please turn to Shmuel Bet, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Vav. Shmuel Bet, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Vav. Okay, so I'm just going to give you guys some background. The way this starts out is there's a 3-year famine in the land, and the reason there's a 3-year famine in the land is because the Gibeonites, they were killed. And I don't know if you guys remember, but in the beginning of Yoshua, when Yoshua came in, he made a pact with the people of Gibeon. At the end of the day, Yoshua was like, don't worry, Gibeonites, we're going to protect you guys, nothing's going to happen. And Shaul actually wasn't very good at keeping that, and he ended up killing a lot of the Gibeonim. And so for this reason, there's a famine in the land. That pact was broken, and so for this reason, there's a famine in the land, and David needs to fix it. So if you look at Pasuk Hey, Vayomu el Hamelech, Ish Asher Kiranu, this is what the Gibeonim are saying. Ish Asher Kirinu Vasher Dimenanu, the guy who, which they're talking about Shaul, who annihilated us and schemed us, Nishmanu Merit Yetzer Bechol Gvul Yisrael. I actually am going to ask you guys a question because I didn't fully understand how to translate this. Are they saying that Shaul was trying to destroy us?
According to JPS, yes.
Okay, good. The man, he's talking about Shaul, he's saying, Shaul tried to destroy us. Yutanam shiva anashim yibanav, v'hukanam lehashem yivat shavun b'chir Hashem. So it's like, the Kibbonim are like, this is our solution. Our solution is we're going to take seven of Shaul's kids and hang them, and we're sounds like a deal. And again, this is all for God. This is all for God. That always kind of makes me feel like, really? Is it really for God? So pay attention to that. But Yomer HaMelech, Ani Tesh, so he's like, okay, this is what I have to do. I'm going to comply with this. ויחמול המלך על מפיבושת בן יהונתן, בן שאול על שבועת השם, אשר ביונתן בן דוד ובן יונתן בן שאול. So, מפיבושת was Shaul's son, I think, who was lame, and David promised Yonatan that מפיבושת will be protected, nothing's going to happen to מפיבושת. But the other people don't really have a great experience. ויקח המלך את שני בני רצפה בתיה. Poor רצפה בתיה, again, takes their sons, אשר ידע שאול, את אלמוני ואת פשוט ואת חמשת בני מיכל, בת שאול, אשר ידע לאדריאל בן ברזילי המחורתי, ויתנם ביד הגבעונים, ויקענם בהר לפני השם. So, who were killed? The kids of רצפה בתיה and מיכל. What? I thought מיכל didn't have kids. This is crazy. So, I'm just going to tell you what Rashi says. So Rashi says that these are the kids of Meirav. Meirav was Michal's sister, and that really Michal raised their children, and a child that you raise is quintessential for a child. So they were hung. Bifnei Hashem, vayiflu shivatan yachad, and they fell, all seven of them together. Humtu biyamei katsil, bilishanim tchilat katsil tzolayim, and they fell in the time of harvest, in the first years of harvest, or first months. Months? Help me out, guys. Okay, harvest time. Okay, so basically they're all killed, and it also kind of makes me feel a little iffy, like, obviously David never said anything bad about Shaul, but I'm sure he didn't have a great relationship with Shaul. And so the fact that he's killing them, I know this is what he has to do, but we'll see. Let's see what Ritzvah Bataya says. So all of them are hanging on Har Hashem. This is what they call this mountain. Har Hashem, what do they call it? Behar Lifnei Hashem. So it's hanging on a mountain. All of these people are hanging. And remember, this is the royal family. This is the royal family. These are Shaul's sons. And they're all hanging there. Vatikach, very active word. A lot of times women use this when they're active, like when the imahot nimol, their children, or they get kilakshim in order to they can have children. Vatikach, they're always taking. Vatikach bilha, vatikach. It's a very active word for in the Tanakh in general. Vatikach mitzvah bataya et hasak vatateu la en hatzul mitchilat ktsil ad nitach mayim alehem min hashamayim. So mitzvah bataya, she takes a sack. And she spread it on the rock, she spread it on the bodies, mitchilat katsil, from the beginning of the harvest, until water, ad nitach mayim, until water was falling on these corpses. Velo nitna of hashamayim lanuach achareihem, she didn't let the birds of the heavens to rest upon them. Imagine, she's like fighting off birds in the middle. Like, everyone's seeing this, these are the royal family, and she's fighting off birds from the royal sons who were killed. Yomah, during the day, and she didn't let the animals of the field come near to these bodies during the night. This must have been such a big act that she was doing, like she's protecting them day and night, okay? So big that they told the king, like, look what Ritzvah Bataya is doing, okay? She's protecting all the bodies that you hung, and whatever the situation is, I don't even know, like, was he supposed to hang them, whatever it is. But look what she's doing. Vayigad David et asher aseta mitzvah bataya, what mitzvah kineged Shaul, the Shaul of Pilagesh. Vayilech David vayikach et atzmot Shaul ve'et atzmot Yehonatan beno me'et ba'alei yavesh Gilad asher gadbu otam melachov bet shan asher talun sham ha'plishtim b'yom ha'kotet plishtim et Shaul b'givo. So what does he do? You think that the first thing he would do would like deal with the son's bodies, but instead he realizes Ritzvah Bataya gives him a sort of like basically it's a sort of rebuking him in the way that he's doing this. And he realizes, I actually never dealt with Shaul's original body, and I never dealt with Yonatan's body. I never dealt with the king and with my best friend. And so first he goes and he deals with them. ויער משם את עצמות שאול, ואת עצמות יונתן בנו, ויסיפו את עצמות המוקעים, ויקברו את עצמות שאול ויונתן בנו, באלת בנימין. He takes the bodies, and he goes and buries them in בנימין, בצלע בקבר קיש אביב, ויעשו כל אשר ציווה המלך. And so he finally went, he's like, okay, they should be buried where they're from, in Binyamin, in the kever of Kish. It's really interesting that it says, the Tanakh tells us, only after this happened does God let the famine end. And so it's really interesting, like you think, like, oh, why does the famine end? Because the Gibonim told us to kill these seven kids. No. The famine only ends once David understands that you need to rectify what was done, and you need to bury, and you need to be respectful. And it's kind of Ritzva Bataya, and also many other women throughout, specifically David's life also, kind of like correct corruption, and you know, let David and the society know that in order to have a good society, you need to treat women well, and you need to just respect the dead and do things that should be common sense to us. Comments? I'm kind of done.